This is the September 29 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Joe Jansen, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Naomi Bloom of TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, and there now you'll find the grain stocks report released by the United States Department of Agriculture on Friday morning as well. And you can also find a way to listen to us as a podcast there under the podcast tab. You can subscribe to our podcast, including the Commodity Week program, Closing Market Report, and the Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast. Joe Jansen now joins us to discuss the USDA grain stocks report and what that might mean going forward. Joe, thank you for being with us. Let's go through the numbers very quickly. I'll give the totals, and then maybe we can break them down into on and off farm. As of September the 1st, USDA says grain stocks for corn at 1.361 billion. So that's the new old crop carryout. Soybean carryout for old crop now 268 million. And wheat grain stocks at 1.779 billion bushels. Now, those corn and soybean numbers are direct numbers because they're end of the year marketing year. And we'll just roll forward into the October WASD as the old crop carryouts, and we'll change things as well for the new crop potentially. They'll change the supply and demand tables clearly, but USDA has other numbers to adjust. What were the things that you saw in the report that you found most interesting?
Well, first, the corn number was a bit of a surprise lower, a bit below where the trade was guessing that might be, and actually a little bit below last year. We thought we might sort of be rebuilding our corn stocks or building up corn stocks, and we're kind of right about where we were last year. Last year, carryout for the 21-22 marketing year was 1.37. Here we're at 1.36. Soybean number was a bit of a surprise upward, and the market has reacted to that kind of maybe even more than I would have thought. Average trade guess going into this report was about 240 million bushels for soybeans. The USDA number came in at 268 million, so that's a little bit above, and the soybean market's off about 20 cents now. As we record this, coming out of the report release, the big surprise for me was thinking about the split between on-farm and off-farm stocks. So USDA reports both, the stocks held by farmers in on-farm locations, and then all the rest of the stocks as separate numbers. And it looks like, especially for corn, that we've got a lot more of our stocks on farm than we have in the past. So looking back in history, we've got about 44% of stocks for corn on farm, and that's the highest sort of proportion that we've seen since 2004. So typically we have a much lower proportion of that carryout that's sitting on farm than we do apparently right now.
Just to give some rounded numbers, around 600 million bushels on farm now, about 750 million bushels in the off-farmer grain elevator system in some form. 44% is a high number. What difference does that make?
Well, I think if it is indeed that, farmers are holding onto those stocks unpriced, I mean, that's a significant liability for the farmer. We've got to think about what is it going to take to pull that corn out of farmers' bins and get it into the supply chain in an environment where, we've got now sort of sub $5 corn. The farmer, having not sold at prices that were much higher, earlier this year, you have to wonder what it's going to take to move that corn into the supply chain.
So going forward, what should farmers consider as they're thinking about pricing the corn that now is coming out of the field?
Yeah, I think we've got to look at, there are some reasonable carries in the corn market. So it may make sense to continue storing some of this corn if you can, again, capture that return to storage. If you have, you know, sufficient access to capital, you've got, you know, relatively low cost, you know, particularly if you have on-farm storage. You've got to really weigh the benefits and the cost. Is that carry gonna pay for itself when you have to cover all the costs of storage going forward?
Does it?
I think the carries are pretty modest. I think there's incentive to move crop now. Of course, I mean, farmers are eternal optimists, and the market could, you know, give us some of, you know, what we've, that price decline that we've seen over the last 6 months could give us some of that back. And I understand the motive to want to wait for higher prices. The question is sort of what's going to happen with, you know, sort of global supply and demand. Are we going to get a piece of news that gives us that rally when, you know, everything sort of points to a higher stocks environment kind of going forward? Export demand appears to be, you know, relatively mediocre. We think we're going to have a pretty decent sized corn crop here in the U.S. Everything sort of points to that now.
What do these numbers mean when we get to the October WASDE, if it is to be released? That's still unsure at this point.
Of course, yes. We always have that hanging over our heads, that possibility of a government shutdown. Irregardless, I don't think the grain stocks report changes much going into the October WASDE. I mean, the really kind of important thing is to kind of figure out, you know, are our expectations in terms of the size of this crop, this current 2023 crop, will sort of the USDA number come in line with those expectations or not? But in terms of, you know, carryout, we are sort of still in a, you know, pretty decent sized corn carryout from old crop. The soy market remains pretty tight. And we have to see, you know, will the current production situation and then sort of what we expect about South American production going forward into the fall and winter, what will that have in store?
I do want to plumb just a second marketing for both corn and soybeans. You suggested that for corn, there might be reason to move it if you can't capture the carry. Is that more likely for grain that you have to push across the scale at the grain elevator? Is that what you're telling me? And if they can store it on farm, they'll have to weigh that out and what the interest cost and storage cost really are?
I think I would always recommend sort of weighing out what the interest and storage costs really are. I think that interest cost is a particularly difficult one to pin down. You know, farms have cash flow needs here at harvest. I think you've got to move enough grain to meet those cash flow needs. And then think really seriously about what else you can do. What's the next best use of that capital? And it may be that there are, you know, better opportunities, either in particularly, you know, thinking about an environment now where we've got, you know, much higher interest rates. Operating loan rates are, you know, pushing north of 8%. That capital that you've got tied up in those inventories has now just become a lot more expensive.
So it may be that the grain sold is better used for the operation of next year than it is to borrow at 8%, is what you're trying to say.
That's exactly it.
What do you see as with the soybean market going forward?
I mean, we're in a pretty tight situation. Some of that seems to be driven by, you know, domestic soybean demand and sort of where sort of the U.S. fits in the international market. That's kind of, I think, the big wild card. What does Chinese soybean demand look like going through now into the fall? Lots of talk about how, you know, China is sort of showing preference for Brazilian origin soybeans. But I think the question is, to what degree will China have to come to the U.S. To fulfill its soybean needs going forward? And obviously there's a lot of uncertainty about the state of the Chinese economy and what that means for food and animal protein demand specifically.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Helped us detail some of the numbers released by the United States Department of Agriculture earlier today. Now let's turn to some analysis of those numbers. John Zanker is here. He's with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. How are things progressing in your area as it references harvest, by the way, John?
Well, it's not overly robust yet. I think that's going to change starting this afternoon and over the weekend, early next week, we're really going to see things start rolling along here. I live on the north side of Indianapolis, and last, I think Friday, I drove up to Lafayette and back and didn't see one combine in the field. There had been some things done, but not much. I'm in Lafayette again today, and you know, we've seen a little progress, but I would say not much, maybe 15% done on soybeans and less than 10% on corn. So a whole lot to go, and I think we can say that about most areas of the Corn Belt. So do we have some hedge pressure coming up, and that could add a little bit more pain to what we're seeing today?
Well, let's talk about that, but begin with, of the crop that you've heard about, how good or how poor has it been, as farmers have been reporting back to you?
I think in general, we're seeing better than expected yields in certainly in northern Illinois, most of Indiana, Ohio. Locally, I would say central Indiana, northern Indiana, maybe 5 bushels better than expectations, maybe not at record levels, but certainly better than expected. Hearing some pretty darn good yields coming out of your area as well over in Illinois. So a little bit lighter to the south in Illinois, some disappointments down there where they just couldn't buy a rain there in the end. But in Iowa, western Iowa doing pretty well, and eastern Iowa not as well. And that's no big surprise given the kind of summer they had there. Really haven't heard much out of the Dakotas and Minnesota yet. So I would say, in general, not seeing anything that would suggest any big movement on yield on the October production report.
So you mentioned that there's likely to be hedge pressure. That usually comes in the marketplace until, for the soy or for corn at least, about half of the crop is harvested. That'll put us well into the month of October. It's also the harvest price option setting month for crop insurance, though I don't believe there will be any reason that we have to worry or think about that very much this year, at least, given the February numbers that we had. How much hedge pressure do you think we'll see?
I think farmers are going to be very stout holders. They're going to resist selling corn as much as possible in here. After today's slide in soybeans, we might see some resistance there as well. So I think we'll see a lot of producers, most producers, doing everything they can to keep from selling into these prices. But that's limited, and there's some expense with that, of course, with storage costs and such. Basis contracts certainly aren't very attractive at this point with how bad the basis has gotten. So. I think, you know, historically, we've here in the last 10 years or so, we've had the lows for Dease corn in by October 1st. Given that we'd bounced back to a 1 month high yesterday, my confidence in that holding is not exceptional. And I'm more worried about the bean market in here, Todd, than I am anything else.
Why so?
Well, demand is just highly disappointing, export demand. Certainly for corn and soybeans and wheat as well. But we have to start, our big shipping period starts this coming Monday, you know, this coming week. And that's about a 6 or 7 week window where we really have to see some big numbers in that 80 to 100 million bushels per week area. And we're just, we're not seeing the action in on the river. That we'd like to see. Basis is collapsed on the river. River levels are low, which is adding to it. Brazil still offering beans to China at a price lower than the U.S., and we typically don't see that at this stage. So I'm very concerned that the next 6 weeks are going to be disappointing, if not highly disappointing, on exports. And the funds are still long. There's still some liquidation, and we're going to have some at least some light harvest pressure, selling pressure. So very concerned about the price of soybeans in here. And we have to worry about maybe a billion bushels being added back to the South American crop this year if Argentina can get back to a normal yield and Brazil has a 10 million ton increase as projected right now. That's 1.1 billion bushels. So, yeah, very concerned.
From late spring through summer, we have talked about the shortened, what potentially was a shortened export window for U.S. soybeans because of the size of this past year's crop in South America, particularly from Brazil, Argentina not having a good crop, but Brazil having a very large crop. How many of the weeks do you think that they're going to take out of from us, meaning from the United States? Can Brazil pick up 2-3 weeks, the next 2 to 3 weeks continued as the export market or more?
Well, yes, they're in it for that long, you know, with the current offers out there. So, again, we could see a 6-7 week stretch where we add, where we average 70 million, which sounds pretty decent, pretty good versus what we've been seeing. But again, that's 10 to 20 short of what we need. Now, the USDA has projected 200 million less exports this year, but sales on the books to date for this new crop are down 330 million. So how do we pick up that 130 million if we don't see any growing season problems in South America? We've gotten help, some big help out of South America price-wise for the last 3 years, that pretty much ties the all-time, you know, combination of big rallies that we've seen out of South America in the last 20, 25 years. So betting on that for a fourth time could be quite expensive. And so we need to be careful in here, Todd.
Domestic crush over the last several years has been historically good. Can it remain that way, and will it make up for the losses in the export market?
It's not going to be able to make up the losses in the export market if South America comes through with a good crop. And then, you know, we'll start to lose some crush potential in the spring and next summer due to Argentina coming back. They're the world's largest exporters of meal and oil, largest crushers. So, you know, I think we have a little bit of an opportunity, certainly with crush. I think our crush could come in 50, 60 million bushels more than currently projected. And margins are very strong, you know, near historical highs. So I like that. And Argentina having half of a crop and very underutilized right now in their crush production output, they're going to try to secure beans somehow, some way, either from Brazil or us, to keep those plants running. So I have some optimism that we'll see a bigger crush number than what the USDA is currently suggesting. But let's say we add 50 to 75 million, and right now we're already 130 million behind on exports. And that will only grow if Argentina and Brazil come through with a big crop this winter.
John Zanker is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. We're now joined by Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Hi, Naomi. Thank you for being with us. We've gone through the numbers as they came from USDA this morning, talked to Mr. Zanker a lot about soybeans. He made a pretty good case for soybeans to be under pressure and a big worry of his. I want to talk mostly with you about corn, but what are your thoughts as it's related to the soybean market?
Yeah, so looking at the quarterly stocks numbers, I mean, obviously it was a little bit higher than the average estimate, but you know, you look at the bottom line and compared to a year ago, it still is lower than what we had a year ago at 274. So in that regard, we have supplies still getting smaller. What I have heard from my clients throughout the Midwest, and primarily the most of what I've been hearing is central to the western Midwest. In south central Minnesota, they're barely getting 35 to 40 for their yields for their early soybeans. In Iowa, if they got the rain, the yields are coming in the low to mid 60s. If they didn't get the rain, they're struggling. And it's between 35 and 40. Portions of western Wisconsin and central Wisconsin only in the low 40s, but again, we were drier. So there still is some contention out there as far as the mixed results all over the Midwest about where these yields actually are at, but ultimately I think it does boil down to the rain amounts out there. Going forward, a few things to be aware of, some technical damage on the charts after this report so far, for sure. However, something to also be mindful of is that seasonally there is a strong tendency for soybean prices to just grind higher starting October 1st into almost the Christmas time frame. So that is there from the January seasonals and also the March seasonals, looking at the 5-year and 15-year pattern. We're going to be at a pretty tight crossroads right now. We're of course trying to understand where our export demand is. We're trying to understand the increased demand on the domestic side with the new crush plants coming online and the ones that are going to be coming online for 2024. And then, of course, coupling that with, is the government shutting down or not? So plenty of things to keep the questions just swirling for the soybean complex overall.
Let's talk about today's trade just a little bit, the Friday trade after the USDA report. That number from USDA, the grain stocks, can be rolled forward into the WASD for October, or the World Agricultural Supply Demand Tables. If you do that, you add just 18 million bushels. That puts the carryout higher at 238 million by the time we get to the fall of next year for soybeans. And in Chicago, the marketplace did not like that very much at all for most of the day, down around 20 cents. Is that enough? I take it it is from your perspective.
Well, we saw some technical damage. The market did not get immediate gratification news. And when it doesn't get immediate gratification news, they take their ball and they go home and prices slide a little bit lower. And I think that's what we saw today, some technical damage. The technical trading took over, the computers took over, and prices slid lower. What we did find was that when prices went down, it did hit the bottom end of a downward channel line that we have been in for most of the month, and found some support there. Prices, as of this conversation, starting to come up a little bit off the lows, but it does set kind of a curious stage from a technical standpoint of what's going to be coming next week. We need some friendly news to come into this market to get it to turn around and work a little bit higher.
Well, speaking of friendly news, the trade was expecting the corn grain stocks number to be 1.429 billion bushels, on average, that is. It came in lower than that at 1.377 billion. What did you make of that figure, and how do you view the corn market?
Well, I'm looking at the market today. You know, it was supportive news for corn. It came out friendly. We had some news there. I think if the soybean market wouldn't have pushed lower, corn would have just hung in there and continued in a little bit more of the sideways trading pattern that it's been in. We did see some technical support fail once we got below the 40-day moving average and also like the 5-day moving average. And so that triggered a little bit of technical selling. As of the moment, it might be posting a bearish key reversal on these daily charts. So that's something to be mindful of. If we see the government shutdown occur, we're not going to get any of the weekly USDA reports next week. So no export sales, no understanding of the harvest pace, ultimately potentially no October WASD report. And sometimes when we don't have news, prices would go sideways to a little bit lower. Ultimately, though, just like what I was talking about in terms of yield, for soybeans, the yield for corn is coming in mixed and variable and all over the place. Not a lot of concrete news there. I did love how Mexico has taken advantage of corn prices being lower overall. They had a big export sale earlier in this week, and then another one on the morning of the Friday report. Also, seasonally, corn prices, similar to soybean prices, have a tendency to work a little bit higher into October. But again, this whole potential government shutdown might be making traders just a little bit cautious and heading to the sidelines in general.
And in China, into the global market, buying corn from Ukraine as well. Interesting to see that happen, given their relationship with Russia, I suppose. But they have had a fairly long relationship now with the grain market in Ukraine, and particularly trying to import corn from that nation. Does that give you hope on the global market that trade will continue and that the U.S. grain will need to move into the export market channels as well?
I think in general, the value of corn being cheap is what's going to help the U.S. market. China had normally, China normally had been buying from Ukraine and the United States, and it wasn't until they got blindsided by the Ukraine-Russia war that they realized that, oh, no, we don't have our traditional buyer available, you know, our traditional marketplace. So that was when they turned around and then really started to entice South America to grow more corn, you know, more corn out of Brazil, more corn out of Argentina, and even out of South Africa, because China needs to be able to have grain year-round from both hemispheres. So now that they got Brazil to do what they wanted them to do and grow more grain, now they have to make sure that they keep everybody in the world a little bit happy so they can get supplies whenever they need it, wherever they need it, and they're just playing their game. So now that U.S. corn is cheap, I think that we are going to see them step up to the plate a little bit more.
I know, I feel that this, and I'll make some analysis here, that coming into the fall, farmers, based on the on-farm and off-farm storage numbers from USDA in this grain stocks report, decided that they should put more stock in the corn they have in their bin, old crop, leave it there. They have about 600 million bushels at this point, and that it would be worth more money because they were pretty sure that they didn't have a corn crop or as much of a corn crop as USDA was saying in the field. Will that turn around to bite them at some point?
Fair question. You know, when you do think back this summer, what you said is true. When we were in the heart of the drought, when prices were working higher, farmers were a little bit nervous to be making sales, old crop or new crop at that time, because they just weren't sure what was growing in their field. They didn't want to over-contract on new crop sales. They were curious to see if maybe they could get a little bit more pricing for what was in their bin at home. I'm a little surprised at the number that the USDA says that the farmers have on hand, just based on conversations that I've had with my clients. I feel that a lot of folks did do a more of an aggressive sweeping out of the bin in July. And so, granted, I only have a smaller portion of clients, of course, nationwide that I talk to versus what's farmers that are out there, but today's number was surprising to me. So that'll be interesting to see in the weeks to come. What I think the telltale sign of all of this will be is what basis ends up doing over the coming weeks. Does it stay wide, which would be an indicator that maybe the crops are good in the fields, or that there is supply in a certain area, or are we going to see basis tighten up, in which case maybe the crop isn't as good as what's in the field, and maybe the farmers don't potentially have on hand as much as the USDA is saying. So that's going to be our biggest indicator. I'm watching basis levels. That usually always tells the truth about what's happening in the marketplace.
How do interest rates, the higher cost of money, complicate marketing corn out of the field?
Yeah, from the standpoint of the interest rates, storage costs, making payments on all of that, it complicates everything in a way that farmers haven't had to think about it. What do you think, about a decade has it been since we've seen something like this? So that is something farmers need to be mindful of going forward. It might make them want to make sales sooner than later. In which case they would take a look at re-ownership strategies on the board potentially, but it does need to be a factor in some of their marketing decisions.
Naomi Bloom is with TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Indiana. She, along with Joe Jansen, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, joined us for our Commodity Week program, recorded the 29th day of September, USDA Grain Stocks Report Day. You may find and listen to the whole of this program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org. WILLAG.ORG. There you'll also find podcasts for the daily closing market report and the monthly Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast, along with information from the agricultural economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist from right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You have a great weekend. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.